driving the lane. Crosses up Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get all the rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
They got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds, and welcome into this edition of the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Your host for the evening, as always, three guys who all went to state in high school in 2018 and left without a ring. First, there's our awesome producer, former Brother Rice linebacker David Moses, who boasted an impressive 31-1 record in high school football, only losing to Loyola in the championship in 2018. I think we can all agree, both in high school and formerly in the Missouri Valley, no one likes Loyola, right, David?
Oh, my goodness. Can't stand them. They still give me nightmares. What I would do to go back in time to, you know, get that championship win and close out as an undefeated team. But, you know, definitely we left our mark there at Brother Rice. But, you know, on to bigger and better now, right?
Absolutely. And, of course, we have my co-host with a hockey player name and some big game, Dane Dreyfus. After tearing through the Chicagoland area on the way to the 2018 state championship, Dane and Waubonsie Valley fell at the United Center. Still a very respectable season, and as the same with David and Brother Rice. Dane, what about that game? What do you remember about it?
Mainly the trauma. Walking through the United Center was really cool, like the catacombs and them getting our auxiliary locker room. Also, too, I would have loved the statistic plug. I had 8 goals and 20 assists as a third-pairing defenseman, so that's pretty respectable, you know?
My bad. You said you had a couple assists in the semifinal game, right, or a game before that?
Quarterfinals.
Okay, yeah. But no interview, you said. So there was some spite there. No interview from the TV station?
No, and the TV station that actual former Red Zone producer Joe Kennedy now works for.
Shout out.
NCTV 17.
Very nice. Is that Naperville?
It is Naperville, very yes. Nice. Covering all the local coverage there.
But, you know, all that said, that couldn't be me. My high school, Cary Grove, won the 6A football state championship in 2018 after defeating Crete Moni. I was right there on the sidelines as a newspaper reporter. So while my team won, I didn't get a ring either. So we have that common denominator, right, guys?
Yeah, we're on the same team. I have a quick funny story about Crete Moni, and then we'll get to
our
regular schedule. I played Crete Moni my junior year in high school, and we were on the road, so it was a little bit of a drive. We got there, we played the game, came back. Long story short, our locker room was cleaned out. Someone came in and took everything. And
back at Brother Rice?
No, this was at Crete Moni, but okay. I was at Brother Rice, yeah. And funny story, my stuff was the one that they took everything out of my bag.
Wow.
My phone, my keys, school pants. It was just terrible. So,
wow.
I mean, here in Crete Moni, I'm glad that you guys beat them.
Yeah, we gave them a nice runaround in the championship. They did that weird thing on the kickoff where, you know what I'm talking about, where they all line up regular, and then as the kicker runs forward, they all kind of mingle about.
Oh,
and
yeah,
do like those fish motions, trying to mess you up, thinking who's going to kick it, where's it going to go.
Like a T-Rex is on the field.
Yeah, like, exactly. They run around exactly like that, like someone's head's on fire. And they do that every single kickoff's like a squib because you don't know what's going to happen. So
right.
that's hard to go
Maximum
against.
Maximum chaos. I love it.
It's hard to go against. But the Trojans, Cary Grove, I should say, kind of took care of business with that. Apparently, they practiced it all week and tried to make it work. So we took care of business in that game. But we're going to talk a little bit more about what we actually are here for, the Redbirds. And we have some talk about Redbirds volleyball to get started with, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see Coach get her first win against Cincinnati in a pretty resilient win where they ended up with a final score of 3-2.
Absolutely, and that's her first win as a Redbirds coach. As Dane said, had some success at Wright State in years past, but it's good to see her get win number one under the belt in the first game.
For sure, yeah. And, I mean, I think the big way that really got them the win was the defense. I mean, they outblocked University of Cincinnati 15-9, which was really nice. The score, the overall points was 78-74. They did get outkilled, though, but some ISU leaders for kills were Caitlin Prodzinski with 11, Sarah Kushner, of course, with 10. She was all over the court. She also had two aces and not to mention 10 digs on the game.
So later that night, after beating Cincinnati, the Redbirds went and faced Florida State again in that Cincinnati Invitational, and they lost 3-1 in that one, so that was a quick four-set match. And then the next day against Dayton, they fought a tough battle, but ended up losing. It was a five-set loss to Dayton, and that's another – those are three tournament teams. Dayton and Marquette played before Purdue and ISU in the same room in the tournament in November, And so that is three big good teams that you got to play early on, and I love that because, as we've seen with the Redbirds, four straight years in the NCAA tournament and not a win to show for it.
You know what? But they also, it's on the road too, so maybe a little home cooking will get them right. But I think if you leave the weekend going 1-2, you get your first win out of the way, but you also get a viral highlight against Cincinnati that went all over social media. I take that as a win.
And you know, you talk about it. We talked about it a little last week. These are growing pains. You know, you have the new regime here. Tons of fresh faces and big shoes to fill from the past teams with the Redbird volleyball team. It will take some time for this new team and this new system to discover their own identity. And I'm more than welcome to allowing Coach Allie Matters and her coaching staff to take their time and do this thing the right way.
Right. And also, too, I mean, speaking of like growing pains, you still got the youth movement going on with Ada Shadewald leading ISU with kills against Florida State, which is very impressive. True freshman. And then there was another freshman, too, that had a good weekend in Reagan Haith. So
talk about the ton of young experience that these, you know, this team is getting. The difference between winning and losing, it's not usually talent, skill, or experience, in my opinion. Quite often, any team can win, you know, on any given day. I think the key factor in whether your team wins or loses is momentum. You know, when your team has momentum, everything is going your way. What you're trying to do is working. When the momentum you have, you get your confidence. I think right now the Redbirds are trying to gain as much confidence and momentum as they can. You know, I see momentum as us getting into, you know, a rhythm and doing what works over and over again for our team.
You know, too, I mean, you have to wonder if fatigue played into the game against Florida State.
Absolutely.
They won the first set 25-22, and then you saw them slightly fade each and every set until they fell in the fourth set 25-14, but they were in every set up until that.
And I won't get ahead of myself, but, I mean, that's common in these weekend tournaments. We got the same thing this weekend at ISU, and they're going to play two tomorrow and one Saturday with very little rest in between, so that's common for all teams in these preseason tournaments. But I want to go back to what you guys were saying for the freshmen, and we talked about this off-air a little bit, but what's most impressive for this freshman class so far that we've seen is that this is not an Allie Matters recruited class. This is Leah Johnson's final recruiting class for ISU. And so the fact that they're already buying in so much for the coach that didn't recruit them, because imagine being a freshman and committing to ISU's volleyball program, meeting Leah, and then finding out for your freshman season it's going to be a totally different coach you didn't meet at all.
You know,
that's got to be hard.
Yeah, that takes a certain level of maturity and professionalism. You know, it's hard to buy into one scheme and then realizing that that scheme is not going to be there when you're, you know, playing.
Exactly.
And then having to jump ship and join a whole new scheme. It takes a certain level of commitment and, you know, props to them for how they've responded so far.
They probably had lots of other mid-major conference or mid-major school offers, maybe even Power 5, and they still picked ISU because they bought into our program and the success and maybe even Leah Johnson. So to see Allie Matters getting her first win in her first attempt and already having these players behind her is actually really relieving because you never knew what would happen with these players.
And, you know, it does something to the morale of the team. You know, you get that first win, it's like a sigh of relief. Okay, we can do this. We can stack this up and build upon this so that, you know, late in the season when it gets time to, you know, have these big tournament games, we're prepared for it.
And if you look at these splits against University of Dayton, I mean, they won everything except for digs. They were out-digged 53-52, but I mean, they outscored them by 12 points. They had five more kills, five more aces, two more blocks. Like, I think as far as losses go, this is one of the best losses you're going to see on paper.
Well, not to mention it was their third game in 36 hours. So to put up that much of a fight against another tournament team, imagine if they had fresh legs. You never know what could happen.
You know, the foundation is there. You know, you can tell that, you know, like you said, third game in 36 hours, but they come out and they play hard-nosed, aggressive. And that's probably with the foundation that Allie Matters and her coaching staff
because they bought in. And they love the new assistant coaches. I met both of them this week at Festival ISU, and I've met Allie a few times, and all the players have talked about how much they love Allie and they love the entirely new staff. And I think it's a good combination for them. I mean, having Leah leave in the middle of the offseason after most coaches were hired is tough. I mean, how do you completely reintroduce your team to a brand new staff and say good luck next season.
And I mean, you can tell why expectations were high, though, still. Because, exactly. I mean, this team was still chosen to win the Missouri Valley Conference for volleyball.
Yeah.
And I think they've done nothing but show why they were expected to do that. And I'm really excited to watch them play at home this weekend.
So looking at the rest of the Redbirds' schedule, this weekend they have Oral Roberts, Green Bay, and SEMO. All three decent teams. I wouldn't say any of them are surefire tournament teams. But then looking at the rest of their schedule, you have matchups against U of I, Marquette, Belmont, Murray State, and Bradley. I'd say at least three of those five will be in the tournament. And so those are games that you really need to look forward to and think how the Redbirds do against these teams will be how they'll play in the tournament.
Right, but most importantly, you need to win your in-conference games too. And I believe their first in-conference game is what? Would that be Evansville on September 23rd?
Yes, it'll be Evansville. It'll be at Evansville, yep.
So as long as you can get off to a good start there playing your out-of-conference games, like the out-of-conference record, it's going to even out in the wash. That's how it usually is in all sports. You're going to win one that you should win. You're going to lose one that you shouldn't. But in general, when you go on that stretch against Evansville, Indiana State, Valpo, that's when we need to win the games.
Do you guys think I'm sorry, David, I don't mean to cut you off, but maybe this is not just volleyball. Maybe it's any sport. Do you think the Valley is tougher this year without Loyola or not because they added UIC and Murray State, Belmont, all those programs?
You know, I think we have to let it play out itself because Loyola was a great team. But like you said, like I think just for basketball as well, you saw the Missouri Valley, like they were competitive in every game that they were in. And they produced on the top end of everything. They were competitive for men's basketball. So I'm really excited.
I kind of have to piggyback off of Dane. You know, I think it's a little too early to tell right now. Once we get into, you know, the flow of the seasons and kind of evaluate where, you know, everybody is, it'll be easier to tell.
Absolutely. So looking at this weekend for the Redbirds, we have the Redbird Classic. All three games will be on WZND. We have a couple crews doing those games, including on Saturday we'll have volleyball right into football at Wisconsin. We'll talk about that later. But these are three teams. These are three tough-ish teams. I know tomorrow before the game they're going to present Allie with the game ball from the Cincinnati win for her first win. And then tomorrow at 7:30 they're going to do what they've done a couple years in a row now, raise a new banner with last year's conference championship. And it's just a testament to the success that these teams have had over the last couple of years. But where's the goal this year for them?
Oh, it shouldn't be any more than that. You know, we want to raise another banner. I know Allie Matters and her staff are enforcing and you know, ingraining those principles in the team. So, you know, I think that they kind of, you know, want to, you know, keep that trend going.
And you know what? Like you said, too, I don't think there was a culture change? Maybe, but the expectations are still there. They know what they're expected to do, and they're not going through a rebuild by any means.
No,
and they're already getting really good production from their younger members of the team. The only thing that concerns me is obviously they won their first game and they've lost two in a row. It's when you get into that streak that the last two games that they lost, like, were they necessarily deserving of loss? Maybe the Florida State more because that was a game where they were out defended. They got out blocked 11-4, but overall, they didn't deserve to lose that University of Dayton game, and then you could slip into bad habits and, like, if things start to go wrong. So I think the most important game this weekend is going to be the first one against Oral Roberts because you just get out – you don't allow that streak to start, and you can get on the right foot.
But, you know, it goes back to, you know, what I was – the point I touched on earlier is about momentum. It's all about momentum. Once you regain that momentum, it does something to your confidence, and you're able to play full steam ahead. It just benefits you all around.
Can we talk about that highlight, too, from the Cincinnati game for a second?
Absolutely.
Went viral.
I think the most impressive thing is, and I think the message for the team this year is just going to be resiliency, because the resiliency of losing your coach in the offseason, and Cincinnati was already celebrating the point while the ball was still in play.
Mm-hmm.
And funny enough, until I was like a senior in high school, I didn't even know you could kick in volleyball. Like, I thought people were just goofing around during like gym class.
No, it's real. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
No, and it was so cool to see. And I mean, I saw it all over Twitter, Instagram. It went viral, and I think that's just a good thing to build on too. It's confidence building.
The clip, for those who don't know, was like, I think two or three Redbirds all kicking the ball to keep it alive after Cincy had thought they won the point, and the Redbirds went on to win the point, which is something that a lot of Redbirds have always done, making sure the play's not over till it's over.
Play to the whistle.
So looking over at the Redbirds schedule from last year in the out-of-conference, they went 4-8 to start the season in these out-of-conference tournaments, including three losses to start, and then they got their first win in the equivalent of tomorrow night, so it would be the opening home game. That game was against Ohio, and that was their banner-raising ceremony September 3rd, 2021. So they got their first win in the first home game last year, but they're already off to a slightly better start if you think about it.
They're ahead of schedule is what you're
saying. Exactly. They're on their way to maybe another conference championship. We'll have to see. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about some MLB and NBA action. There's all kinds of stuff going on there. So we'll be back on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 1033 WZND.
And welcome back into The Red Zone here on 1033 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. We're going to change it up just a little bit. We're going to get back to Redbirds in time for football coming up. But first, we want to talk a little bit about two of the other professional sports leagues, the MLB and the NBA. Starting with the NBA, there was a big trade today.
Huge bombs.
So one of you guys want to take me through it?
Yeah, I mean, I could take you through it. We had a trade sending Donovan Mitchell over to Cleveland. And what happened was there was three unprotected picks sent to Utah in 2025, 2027, and 2029, and pick swaps in 2026 and 2028, which basically means the teams just swap first-round picks, which is kind of more of a gamble than it is even, like, could be a good thing. It could hurt the other team as well. We saw that with the Nets and Celtics. So along with the Rudy Gobert trade, Utah has gathered 13 unprotected or lightly protected picks through 2029, according to Adrian Wojnarowski.
But, you know, check this out. I know typically you would want to start with where the star is going, which is in Cleveland. The Utah Jazz, when you think about what they've gotten in return, they just picked up Talen Horton Tucker from the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about it. They got Colin Sexton from the Cavaliers. They've picked up some young talent. I don't want to say that they're going to be, you know, a sneaky play-in team play up. They're far from that. Let's just be real. But they've gotten some, you know, pretty good talent, young talent. And then you talked about the picks. You know, they could be headed in a semi-good direction. You know, we'll just have to wait and see.
And on top of Colin Sexton, some other players that they acquired for the roster were Lauri Markkanen, first-round pick Ochair Agbaji, which I believe was the guard from Kansas this past tournament. And then as well as I believe that's it, Colin Sexton as well. So they got roster pieces, which is nice. So if they're going to go full rebuild a la the OKC Thunder and they're going to strip down their roster, you can get more assets for that. My only thing is in the NBA, like, I like the unprotected picks. The lottery, it's the most lottery there is. The NHL, it's only two teams in the lottery, realistically. The NFL doesn't even have a lottery. The MLB, you can't even trade your picks, period.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's good for them, but at some point, you're going to have too much rostered players, like, of young talent, and you're going to have no playing time to give them. OKC is running into that problem this upcoming season, but with Chet Holmgren being done for the year with his Liz Frank injury, I guess they're going to have more roster time to give out to their younger talent, but personally, I think it's a win for Cleveland, and I think it gets them back in to the playoff picture.
Dane, I think you meant to say Bulls legend Lauri Markkanen. You missed that part.
Don't mention anything from the Garpax era. It gives me PTSD.
Didn't he lead in, like, three-pointers?
Oh, yeah. When the Bulls were, like, in that, like, really bad, like, almost tanking rebuild stage, like, right before LaVine sort of took off, like young Lauri Markkanen was good.
Yeah.
And maybe he looked better on a bad team, but he was pretty good.
He was the focal point of the offense when LaVine was on the team.
Yeah.
But with the Cavs last year, didn't they have, like, a super, you know, tall lineup where Evan Mobley was running the four, Lauri Markkanen was running the three or something like that?
And then you got occasionally Kevin Love just run the one.
Right?
I don't know. Have the stats pulled up. I don't think Markkanen was that bad with the Cavs all last year.
No, he was really
efficient. Pretty decent. I remember a couple Bulls fans saying, like, maybe we should have kept him around. But no. He wouldn't have fit into the current Bulls system. So I was going to say the Jazz were not championship ready. I mean, we act like maybe they were with Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, but they weren't. They tried multiple years. They couldn't make it past a couple rounds. The furthest they went was the COVID bubble, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
It was almost like they were missing that one extra piece.
Yeah.
They had the defensive side with Rudy Gobert, and then offense, you know, Donovan Mitchell, that was his whole thing. But it was almost like they were missing like a good guard to come down and facilitate and give them the ball. But it sucks to see that, you know, how in one summer, two biggest stars in that franchise, you know, just went elsewhere.
Well, didn't Rudy say something like it's me or Donovan at the end of the season? He said one of us is getting traded.
I believe it was more of Donovan that was stirring that pot. But overall, I think I think we're not giving credit where credit's due to Danny Ainge, though, collecting all these picks. He was responsible for the rebuild in Boston. So, and he could tell you're not going to win with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert as your two stars, which they're both great basketball players. But I personally believe that you either need three top 20 players on your roster to win a championship or five top 35 players to get it done, because it's the names that drive the sport. Mm-hmm. There's hasn't been really an all-around balanced team that wasn't driven by like three players that have won. Boston would have been nice to see, but they still had their two-headed monster.
And they were young.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, I don't think that Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert's relationship was as good as we thought it was.
Mm-mm, no.
You know, going back to you know, that whole COVID incident, you know, with Rudy Gobert.
Oh, yeah.
And how they scandals coming out about how he, you know, neglected to, you know, do safety protocols and got Donovan Mitchell sick.
Touched all the microphones in the press conference.
It was the beginning of the end. Yeah. Didn't even know
that was when the world kind of fell down. It was started with Rudy Gobert and the Jazz. They shut the one game down, and then all the other leagues kind of shut down at the same time. And I was kind of like, that was the moment where I realized how serious it was, because I was like, holy cow, if sports are done, I've never been had a time where sports is paused for
thanks,
the whole
Rudy
time.
Gobert.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Rudy Gobert.
But I think we want to talk a little bit about how does this affect the Eastern Conference?
Well, as a
general
hockey fan, how does this affect the Toronto Maple Leafs? overall, in the Eastern Conference, I think if you're a Bulls fan, and we'll talk about it a little bit locally, this hurts the Bulls bad because they've had a quiet offseason, which might not be a bad thing because they were hurt all of last year, and the best addition is getting your own players back from injury. But I personally believe you're going to see Brooklyn move back into the standard playoff picture. You're also going to see Cleveland move into the standard playoff picture. You'll see the 5 and 6 seed in Toronto and Chicago move into the play-in games. And then I personally believe Charlotte drops out of the play-in games. New York might sneak in. So it's looking like for the play-in games, if all pans out as I think, your play-in round, you're going to be looking at Atlanta, Chicago, New York, Toronto, and maybe instead of New York, you can throw in Detroit with the rebuild expedited.
Yeah, I was going to say New York could even be a stretch, but this is something we haven't been able to say in a minute. The Eastern Conference is kind of stacked.
Yeah, it's unreal. The NBA Easy is done.
They've got some really good talent. They've acquired a lot of talent on the Eastern Conference side from, you know, this offseason. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see who kind of takes that front lead as the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Well, it's interesting. Even as the East was weaker the last maybe 3-4 years, we still had two Eastern Conference champs in Toronto and Milwaukee.
Yep.
I mean, they had two superstars in Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kawhi Leonard, but they had great supporting cast around them as well. But they always talk about how, not anymore, but the Eastern Conference was always so much weaker that as soon as they got to the finals, they were going to lose to the Lakers and the Warriors of the world. But not in that chance. Those teams prevailed. So there's always a chance that even a weaker Western Conference team can turn it around this year and beat one of these super teams coming out of the East.
I really like what Cleveland's doing, though. They've got some great young pieces.
Are they championship ready, though, in 2023?
No, but they're a couple years away because they're still a young roster. Their oldest star player at this point is Donovan Mitchell, who's 25, I believe. And so you're still building with Darius Garland. You have Evan Mobley, who that kid's a stud. Defensively and on the offensive side of the board. And no one talks about Jared Allen anymore. And that's one of the biggest pieces that Brooklyn really screwed up their whole situation with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, because he would be the perfect piece with them. But Brooklyn, I honestly think, is actually still the front runner to be the best team in the East. If that roster gets to play a full season together, you better watch out.
Especially keeping Kevin Durant around, which is huge for them. And if they get that core together for more than like 10 games a season, they could do amazing things. Because never forget that Kevin Durant and the Nets were his shot away from beating the Bucks to go to the finals. His foot was on the line, and so they called it back. But the Bucks could have gone to the final, or the Nets could have gone to the finals instead.
And I think a sneaky MVP vet for next year could be Kyrie Irving in a full 82-game season.
Really? You think so?
Oh, my God. Yeah, he might be the best point guard in the game, but we haven't been able to see him for 3 years.
That's why I'm not going to take that bet, because I feel like after 2 years of not really playing as much, he might have to take a step back.
Dude, he dropped 250-point games last year when he
played. Yeah, because he played like 10 games. He's not going to have any wear and tear.
Even better than Stephen Curry, though?
I wouldn't take that.
The numbers Curry put up last year, which is astronomical.
Curry owned the league last year. Personal awards and numbers, Stephen Curry had a year last year.
You guys are talking about Stephen Curry like he didn't just have his most inefficient regular season in his career.
Who ended up with the ring?
I'm talking finals MVP.
Finals
MVP. No disrespect to Steph Curry. I would probably have him in my top 7 players of all time. But overall, I'm talking about regular season MVP. Kind of empty. And let's be real, it's an empty award. Like, no one cares. It's the award that everyone cares about is who gets the ring at the end of the year. And of course, it was Steph Curry. And Golden State is probably still the front runner to win it all next year as well.
But you know, last year was a toss up anyway. I Jokic walked away with the MVP, but you could have given it to a number of players. There was Jokic, there was Giannis always, Embiid was up there, who honestly he vocalized his frustration with, you know, who was deciding who was going to win MVP at the end of the year, because he believed that he won it. It was a toss up last year. So
DeMar DeRozan.
Not
at the end of the day, he was not on that same level, for a while he was right up there with the Embiids of the world.
Well, the best ability is availability. And you know what? Embiid averages about 45, 50 games a year. So not impressive in that sense. And then you get Jokic, who plays a lot of games, but I think he missed a couple weeks with like a groin injury or something. But Ja Morant, I think, would have won it if he stayed healthy. And that's just the guy that you want to see develop and really take this league over, because he brought a Memphis Grizzly team that was great without him as well. Probably the best coach team in the NBA during the regular season last year. But Ja Morant really was the heartbeat of that team.
Ja Morant, if he stays healthy, could be what D Rose could have been. You know what I mean? Like,
don't
he, like,
that.
No, I'm not trying to be mean to
D
Rose. I'm not trying to be mean to D Rose, but, you know, we know how great Derrick Rose was for a long time. And then it just all fell apart with some injuries. And he's still decent now, but he's never the same. If Ja Morant stays healthy, he could be even better.
No, Jalen Brunson for the Knicks. Oh, God. So sad. So sad for Knicks fans. Because it's like, oh, the Donovan Mitchell trade just broke. And then it's like, okay, the Knicks, like, social media guys probably like, okay, we can break the RJ Barrett extension now.
Really quick, can we just talk about how good of hands the NBA is going to be in the next few years? We have so many young stars that have really emerged as premier players in the league. And, you know, you have Curry, LeBron, KD. They're kind of on their way out. Definitely, I know LeBron said he wants to play with his little son Bryce now, so I don't know how many years that adds on. Yeah, no shot. But, you know, it's LeBron. You never know. Yeah. But you talk about the Luka Doncic of the world, Ja Morant, Jason Tatum. The league is in pretty good hands, so it's going to be exciting to see these guys propel and add to their accolades.
We could talk about the NBA all day, but we have just a little bit more time in this segment. I wanted to at least touch on the MLB, specifically the White Sox. I'm going to let David Moses kind of take this one over because he's a White Sox fan, and you guys are missing a coach right now.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to gauge what's going on with the, you know, in the White Sox ball club. So it seems like the White Sox want to keep this an in-house, you know, situation as much as possible. They're giving us the bare minimum. They're saying that Tony La Russa is out indefinitely with health issues. We don't really know much of what's going on other than that. You know, I was saying that it could potentially hurt him because, you know, when you get to the late ends of the year, and we talked about it last week, how underwhelming the White Sox have played, your job could be on the line for the entire ball club, players included. So this is the only precious time that, you know, La Russa is missing. So, you know, prayers out to him. Hopefully he gets better soon. But, you know, it only hurts him in the long run.
Where do the White Sox go from here? Like, what's the goal for the rest of the season? It's obvious. We've talked about last week and before that this was obviously a disappointing season for the White Sox. But somehow, some way, they're still in it in the last month. There's still a chance for that wild card spot or even the division championship. What's the expectation now?
Get healthy and win as many games as possible. I think that's the simplest way to say
it.
I think that, you know, especially it does more going into the playoffs, coming off of, you know, a string of two wins, three wins, four wins. You need that going into the playoffs. That playoff atmosphere, I think they realized that last year is a different beast. And I think it's going to do well if they come in and string some wins together. Like I was talking about earlier, it does something to the momentum and confidence of the team.
I mean, I don't think any team in the AL would want to play a fully healthy White Sox roster, because they would be the definition of a wild card if they slip into a wild card spot. I mean, what's their three-headed rotation right now? I mean, you're going to run into Dylan Cease, Lucas Giolito, who's had a rough year, and then Johnny Cueto, who's been like the surprise of the staff. So, and there's no question that the lineup is riddled with talent. Great hitters, but none of them have been able to put it together or stay healthy. And I'll tell you what, like, first of all, prayers out to Tony La Russa. Like, if they're keeping it hush-hush, he's an old dude. Like, health's really important.
Absolutely.
But I do want to remind, like, as a Cardinal fan, back to when Mike Matheny was given the boot and replaced with Mike Schilt, is when they went on, like, a 30-10 tear to end the year and slip into a wild card spot. I don't think that's unreal. This is a better White Sox team than was that Cardinal team that slipped in. It's all about getting hot at the right times. And I think this White Sox team is in luckily a weak enough division to do so, too.
Unfortunately, though, they're going to hit the Astros or the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, on paper, this team is, like Dane said, a lot better than they've put out. I think once they get healthy, once they, you know, string together some wins, I don't know. The sky's the limit for this team.
So they say the Astros, Justin Verlander, probably still the front runner for the AL Cy Young in front of Dylan Cease, I would say, is only a 15-day IL with a calf injury. I think, you know, as much as it's fun to try and go for personal awards, I think they'd sacrifice letting him keep up the Cy Young campaign if it meant sitting him for the month and then having him back for the playoffs. And I think that's what they're going to do. So if you do have to play the Astros, kind of going against what Dane said, just listing these guys off, you got Lance McCullers, Justin Verlander, and Framber Valdez. That's also a three-headed monster in Houston. So that would be a very tough series.
And Javier, too, is pretty good as a
exactly.
four. So, and he'll probably come out of the bullpen, though.
And Luis Garcia isn't bad either. So you're looking at a team that in the Astros that has been there before multiple times in recent years. We know they got all the flack for the cheating thing, and that's fine. And we've talked all about that. But that was years ago. And since then, they've been back to the World Series.
Well, with the new playoff format, that would be – they'd get the first round bye. Yeah. So it would be the Yankees. And that's a team – if I'm the White Sox, I'd be licking my chops if we can get in and play the Yankees.
Well, that's if the White Sox win the division, though. I'm talking about if the White Sox end up squeaking into a wild card, they might still have to play Houston.
But you know
– No. Because the new – Houston right now is the one seed, and there's seven teams that make the playoffs now.
Right.
So you got to worry about getting out of the first round first.
Right.
So you're going to have to run the gauntlet if you make it in as the wild card team. But yeah. focus on one game at a time, you know?
Exactly. I don't know. I still like the Yankees, though. I still like them take it all. I know that it's been a rough patch, but think about it. It's a 162-game season. There are going to be ups and downs, and if you want a down to happen, I mean, this is kind of the perfect time. Well, maybe not, actually, because it's right before the playoffs.
The long ball doesn't win championships. It's pitching and relief pitching.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
That's what I believe in, and, some of the most boring World Series teams is, like, that 2015 Royals team.
Yeah.
Do they even have a Hall of Famer on that roster?
It's a testament.
At this point, neither do the 2016 Cubs. At this point.
Chapman.
Oh, that's – I guess
if his off-the-field antics doesn't screw him up, it'll be Chapman.
Or I guess if Chris Bryant ever figures out his back thing and comes back.
Maybe Anthony Rizzo.
He's not a Hall – I love Anthony Rizzo, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
Hall of just great dudes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great guy, great teammate, does not that. And I think we're going to call that for the baseball segment now because we have to call it a break. And when we come back, we're going to get WZND's news director, Blake Borgard, on, and we're going to head to the gridiron and spend the next half hour talking about some football. We'll be right back on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome into The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. This week on Twitter, we campaigned to get Wisconsin's own Barstool Big Cat on the podcast, and unfortunately, Big Cat did not respond to our requests. It was sad news, but instead, we decided to get an even better guest, WZND's news director, Mr. Blake Borgard. Blake, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today, guys. I'm excited to be here.
So Blake is coming onto the show, one, because he's a great guy, and two, because he's going to be joining David and I in the booth Saturday night in Madison calling the game.
It's gonna be a blast. I've been doing a lot of research for it. I'm excited to see what the Birds are gonna have to put on display. Obviously, 1-8 all time in games against Big Ten opponents, but I feel that we have a little more juice than we did maybe in some of those years past, and we might be able to pull out something special there. I don't want to jinx anything yet, though.
It's kind of like we're walking around with a little moxie, a big chip on our shoulder. Who knows? We can go out there and shock the world. I can see it.
Our jerseys are cooler.
That's also true. So I'm looking over the Wisconsin roster, and there's a lot of players who redshirted different years, maybe only saw their first action in last year's Las Vegas Bowl, stuff like that. I mean, they are a good team, don't get me wrong, with good recruits, but they're not exactly old. They have a lot of young players, aside from, of course, quarterback Graham Mertz, who's had a couple years to try and put it together and hasn't lived up to expectations, but is still a solid quarterback.
Well, I love that you mentioned how young this team is because Braylon Allen, the sophomore running back that they have there, he was a 17-year-old freshman last year, rushed for nearly 1,300 yards, and he had a phenomenal season. And Wisconsin is just notoriously known for having those phenomenal running backs. I mean, it goes all the way back to Monty Ball, Melvin Gordon, and right now in the league, Jonathan Taylor is really putting on display Yes, exactly. Hopefully going to be tearing it off from a fantasy team, but that's a discussion for a different
time. And don't disrespect James White, Corey Clement, Dare Agumbawale.
I don't know about Dare. No offense to him. But
his sister's nuts at basketball, I'll tell you that.
The list just goes on and on and on for them. So they are a very young team. And ISU, on the other hand, they're getting a little bit old there.
Yeah, I mean, you have Zach Anikstad, excuse me, I learned today it's Stead, not Stad. Zach Anikstad, he came from Minnesota, and his last full season was 2018, I believe. So he's had a couple of years where he's had different injuries, maybe sat as a backup. So he's trying to get a fresh start alongside his brother Brock, the receiver here at ISU.
I'm excited to see him. He has a family pedigree of just athletes. His father, Scott Anikstad, played professionally for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Washington Commanders. I know back then where they were the Redskins, but now Commanders. And then here's a fun fact for you. He's cousins with current professional player Sam Decker, who is overseas right now playing for the London Lions. But he has had his fair share in NBA action. So it's safe to say that the athletic pedigree is there. I'm excited to see it in full display, in a Redbird uniform for the first time.
Yeah, I think just with this team, they're like we said, they have some age and they don't necessarily have a lot of experience, though. I mean, even the experience together, I should say. The backup quarterback now for the Redbirds is Jackson Waring, who did play a lot for the Redbirds last year. But his main thing was it was just a lot of ground and pound because he couldn't figure out the passing game. It's not like we don't have any targets. It was just the quarterbacks just couldn't figure out the passing game.
But, that's been the identity of the Redbirds for the past few years is pound the rock. And, you know, it's kind of made it tough for them to convert on third down. Their third down percentage has been down the past few years. But it's made it tough to convert and also just score points. Over the last 2 years, they scored less than 20 points. That's their average. It's going to be interesting to see how they use this new quarterback in this new system. Can they put up more points? And, I mean, what an opponent to test that than Wisconsin.
And, I mean, like, I feel like there's been a hole in the offense ever since James Robinson went to the league. Mm-hmm. And we all knew he was going to tear it up, and it's been fun to watch him. But we need to worry about the here and now. We need to find a new identity on this offense. And hopefully this transfer QB can be the first step in the right direction.
Well, and even if the passing game isn't working again, he always has the possible handoff to Cole Mueller, who last year was finished second in MVFC Freshman of the Year voting. He was a MVFC All-Newcomer Team pick, and he just tore it up on the ground for the Redbirds last year. He was a reliable running back, and he might have the best hair in the Missouri Valley also.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, you said it, Mikey. He was third in the Missouri Valley last year in rushing yards. He was 15th in all of FCS rushing on the leaderboard. 400-yard-plus efforts, 690-yard games. And I'm sort of regurgitating a lot of my notes here for
you're totally right.
Game coming up. But he's the thing about him is, you know, he only had 9 career starts up to that point. So now he's got a full season of work under his belt. He's had time in the offseason to put on some weight, put on some strength, look at some film, see what he could improve on. And also, his offensive line is going to be coming back together, and they're going to be one cohesive unit now that they've got a lot of guys coming in there. Drew Bones, of course, the center, the senior, 32 career starts for him. The offensive line in total has a combined 31 career starts. So a lot of those guys are going to have to learn to mesh early on in this season. And obviously, when you're playing against Wisconsin, it's going to start in the trenches if you want to be looking to beat them.
In the trenches, but when you think about it, you just talked about the tape he put out last year. Other teams are watching that. So they're going to try their best to kind of counter what they expect you to do. I'm interested to see how Brock's back is going to, you know, gauge that and tell his team we're gonna have to come out with a certain game plan, because we know that these opponents are, they kind of know, you know, we're a pound the rock team. Put it in the air, let your quarterback do his work, and, you know, gain the yardage from there.
I think we talked about last week how maybe Wisconsin might look at this game as an easier start, because we talked about versus Penn State last year. They did kind of get a rough go. So maybe they're looking at it as more of a warm-up game, a preseason game. When in reality, for us, it's a game to get out of conference and get a nice win. For them, it's like, oh, even if we fall, it's still out of conference.
But that attitude right there is what causes upsets.
Exactly.
If you come into a game thinking, oh, this is just a blow-off game, let's just get our feet under us, let's do this, that's what's going to cause you to be on ESPN for an upset. Yep. So I really think that, you know, with the chip that ISU has on their shoulder, who knows? Don't quote me on this, but we could have an upset here.
According to ESPN's Football Power Index, it has Illinois State at a 2.6% chance of winning the game. So
what you're saying is,
give me the birds. Give me the birds.
There is a chance.
There is a chance. And you know what?
There is hope.
You know what they say? Good teams win. Great teams cover, and we have no idea what the spread is for this game yet. So whatever it is, give me the Birds money line then.
Yeah, I don't know what that'll be for them. What do you think? What's your guess? I mean, you're a big sports betting guy. Where do you think they'll set it? If you were the odds maker, what do you think?
If I'm the odds maker, I'd probably set the line at, because you got to factor in that you go for 2-point conversions when you're up 35. So give me the line at 39 points.
But I was talking to a friend today, and we were like, why would Wisconsin go, if they're up by a lot, why would they go any more than like 20 points up? Because you're not going to have the starters in anymore if they're up 3 touchdowns in the third. There's no reason.
It's the first game of the year. You want to get your feet under yourself.
Yeah, I mean, they've dealt with a lot of injuries in the past. You don't want to get injured in a. They're going to treat it as a very winnable game, especially if they're up 3 touchdowns.
Braylon Allen will sit second half if it's a blowout, but Graham Mertz will play the whole game as a confidence booster.
That's valid, yeah.
Because his number one career highlight right now is his I Got 5 On It music video for when he signed his NIL deal. So overall, it's going to be – they're going to treat it as a tune-up game. Illinois State's coming in with the chip on their shoulder. And you know what? I believe in this team, and I believe in Coach Brock's back.
I think that's a good way – to look at this game going forward. I mean, Coach Speck has been with the Redbirds for a long time. He's seen a lot of games like this. He was their coach the last time they played a Big Ten matchup and won against Northwestern. And I think the mentality going in is Coach Speck needs to tell them the same thing. Just say, hey, every game is winnable. You have to play football. They play football the same way as us. And I think it's might be possible.
And you know what, too? Like, we're talking about this game, and we know Wisconsin fans are scared. Big Cat wouldn't come on this show. He wouldn't even respond to us. He's so scared.
No, he wouldn't.
So all I'm looking forward to is if the Birds score first, he's going to get a thanks for coming out, Wisconsin tweet sent right his way.
Look, he'll be at the game, I would assume. Well, maybe not, because it's not a very meaningful game. But he's a big Wisconsin guy. He could be there.
Opening week? No. He'll be there. He's got to be there.
I'd hope so.
I went to the game last year for opening week, and they had Cole Caulfield and Ryan McDonough there.
That's cool.
And boy, did I chirp them.
Always a hockey fan, even at the college football games.
Well, I mean, I had to let Ryan McDonough know that they were $17 million over the cap hit when they won the Stanley Cup. There was an asterisk on it, too. There was no fans. Okay, moving on.
Yeah. David, I think you had a point to make about the football team before we got on to hockey again.
Yeah, so I'm really thinking that this is going to be a game where special teams is going to play a bigger role than we actually think. I'm interested to see if Coach Brock's back, you know, knowing the task he has in front of him, will look to get spontaneous on special teams. Maybe some trick plays on the return game or implementing different rotations on the coverage side to maybe try and force a fumble to flip the field for this offense that we know has struggled gaining yardage in the past.
Well, I think that's a really good point that you bring up about just getting your offense more opportunities. And I think that a way that we're going to utilize our team on the offensive end is going to be utilizing the zone run scheme. I mean, the Bears are implementing it now with their new zone run scheme, you know.
That's reassuring.
It's about getting, instead of getting vertical at first, you got to get a little bit horizontal to figure out that defense. And obviously, the Badgers lost their two captain senior linebackers last year in Leo Chanel, as well as Jack Sanborn, who, by the way, are tearing it up in the NFL right now. So you've got two guys in there at the Will and the Sam who aren't very experienced. And so if you get a guy like Cole Mueller out there who knows how to poke and prod a defense and find that crease, you know, you might just be able to break off a big run there.
You know, Mueller's had some pretty good games. You know, last year he had a 170-yard game with a 69-yard touchdown and then went over South Dakota last year, following that up with a 159-yard game and a 3-touchdown game at Western Illinois. So he has that pedigree to go out there and produce some pretty good games.
And South Dakota, not a bad squad. Western Illinois, and sorry to my dad's alma mater, but South Dakota was a pretty good squad. So,
yeah, I think this Redbirds football team, as you said, Blake, they're going to be able to break through for a couple big runs. Cole Mueller is definitely going to have at least one. And as you said, he had a 69-yard touchdown run last year. He's going to have possibly one against Wisconsin. I mean, I'm not to discount this Wisconsin defense because I shouldn't do that ever. They're very good. They're still a Big Ten defense. We have to be real with ourselves and realize every player on this team is on this team for a reason. They are a Big Ten college football player. Every player in the field alone is probably better than most players on the ISU team. But as a unit, there's always weaknesses.
Yeah, let's not forget, this is one of the top respected programs in the nation.
We just listed off like 10 running backs from the NFL from Wisconsin. I can name one from even ISU, James Robinson.
And they're not even running back you either. They're like offensive line.
No. It's not Alabama where you're just pumping out running backs and receivers. No, they still have a bunch of great linemen the NFL from Wisconsin.
We don't need to get into the Alabama conversation because they're just NFL U. Like, every position.
And quarterbacks, yeah.
How about we talk about that? You know, Alex Leatherwood, former Alabama offensive lineman, you know, got picked up by the Bears.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break, though. And when we come back, we're going to talk all about the NFL, as David teased. We'll be right back here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3
WZND. And it looks like that's all of the Barstool Big Cat we're going to hear on the show today. Just that little bump, because we did not end up having Big Cat on the show as we wanted today, but that was a conversation for last segment. Now we're going to talk about the NFL. So, David, I'm going to let you start because I kind of cut you off before we went to break. You were talking about the Bears and a new pickup.
Yeah, so Alex Leatherwood, he actually got drafted in 2021. I was surprised to see him get released by the Raiders, actually. He got picked up by the Bears, and in my opinion, that's a pretty good pickup. He's a young guy, low ceiling. You know, it's a low-risk, high-reward move, and I think that it will definitely benefit the offensive line for the Bears.
So, like, just simply looking at it from, like, a contractual standpoint, the Raiders are still on the hook for all of his guaranteed money. We're only paying him $2 million a year on average. So, ultimately, at the end of the day, if this doesn't work out, it was a bad experiment. But if it does work out and he does develop, like, the mauler that he was supposed to be inside in the run game, then we got an offensive lineman on his rookie contract until the year 2026, which gives us a lot of time to build a team around Justin Fields in order to eventually go and compete for the championship.
Talking about Justin Fields, I know, Mikey, you were saying earlier, Robert Griffin, you know, he posted on Twitter how impressed he was that the Bears front office was finally playing towards his strengths. Bears coaching staff was finally playing towards his strength, calling those plays that are best utilized. This young quarterback that, you know, typically likes to move out of the pocket, make good throws, even using his legs to gain yardage. So I'm impressed with what the Bears have done so far, and I look forward to seeing how they fare up against Trey Lance. I know, you know, there was a report that Justin Fields, you know, he kind of feels some way towards the 49ers for passing on them in the draft. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, I was just about to say, too, with you describing the Bears playing to Justin Fields' strength, I just want to congratulate you on having Blake Bortles as your new quarterback. I mean, that's literally what he is. Like,
I thought you meant Blake Bortles actually did sign it down.
No, I would be so upset because I love the boat. But
speaking of Big Cat,
that's literally what Blake Bortles was in Jacksonville. Now, given Blake Bortles did have success when he was throwing on the run, moving out of the pocket, but that doesn't win games in this NFL. You need a true pocket passer that has some mobility, but that's not. They're not making throws on the run intentionally, which is what it looks like the Bears scheme is looking like.
But as RG3 said, I think this new coaching staff is willing to adapt as they see Justin Fields' progression, unlike Matt Nagy and others who would just kind of throw out their game and say, okay, Justin, learn it. And I can't speak for how it actually was, but that's what it looked like to me. And as Robert Griffin said, I think they're finally adapting, saying, okay, here's how we see Justin, and here's how we can best use his tools.
You know, Swaggy Nagy, he was more so focused on the whys. Why am I being a bad coach? Why can't I convert on third down?
Why do you want the other guy to call plays?
What pair of khakis and visor should I wear today? What combination?
Oh, yeah. He was focused on going to his son's football game, which, I mean, you know, it's a good dad, but... You know, at the cost of the Bears' future, it's just, oh, come on.
How about you just focus on having a 4,000-yard passer for the first time in your franchise? Like, how embarrassing.
You know, I can't wait for you Packers fans to realize, you know, what you have in Jordan Love when he throws for 2,000 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 15 interceptions in 1 year and calls that, oh, this is going to be a breakout year for him.
You mean in 1 year against the Bears? Because that's just how it goes for the Packers. Like, you never know who's up next, but who knows? Maybe it's Kurt Benkert, their third stringer, that's going to take the helm after Rodgers. But, yeah, moving on, too, I think we're going to talk a little bit about the AFC, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we could sit here and talk about the NFC all we want and how Mitch Trubisky and Aaron Rodgers both have had 6 touchdowns in a game. But we're going to talk more about the AFC, and we're going to go to specifically who we think is going to win each AFC division. I think that's what we said we'd do, right, guys?
Yep. Yeah,
I'm ready to roll. What division you want to start with?
So I think we should start with out east. So that's looking at the Jets, Bills, Dolphins, and New England. What do we think, Dan? You go first.
My brain says Buffalo. My heart says New York.
You got to pick one.
I'm going Buffalo. No question about it.
The Jets?
No, I'm saying because of the Zach Wilson storylines.
Well, he's not even playing.
Well, it's not confirmed yet that he might not make it back for week 1.
Right.
But I do like what they're building. They've added a lot of young pieces, and I like Mo Salah. I think he's a good coach.
By far, Jets had the best draft last year.
I feel like they say that every year about the Jets.
Sauce Gardner. Jermaine Johnson.
And Garrett Wilson.
Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, no doubt. They added weapons.
Those are all first-round picks that they got.
Yeah, and Mekhi Becton being done for the year definitely hurts, but I like what they're building there for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this thing before, but it's like essentially with the Jets, this is just what came to my mind. It's essentially, you know, they got all these nice new fancy tools, but they're essentially driving around a garbage truck with nice spinny shiny rims at this point. This team is still not, it's still not great. They don't have someone opposite of Sauce that I feel could really cover anyone, and I would have to take the Bills if anything. But I think that the Dolphins are the sneaky team that a lot of people aren't really paying attention to right now because they're writing 2 off already.
I think I'm also going to go with the Bills, and I think this could be a year for them because there's been a couple years in a row where they are one of the best teams in the AFC and come up just short of that championship. I mean, it's going to be close.
I'm surprised no one has said the Patriots. I'm not going with the Patriots. Don't get me wrong. I read a report earlier this week that they don't even have an offensive coordinator right now. They have Bill Belichick and whoever the –
Matt Patricia.
Yeah, they're running offensive plays right now, which Matt Patricia, come on now. We saw what he did in Detroit a few years back. But, yeah, I'm going to have to go with Buffalo. Josh Allen, I think, is front runner in MVP talk, so I'm going with him.
To the north, home of the last team to win the AFC, the Bengals and Joey Burrow, but they're also joined by a pretty decent division, the Ravens and Steelers notably, and then the Browns kind of have something going on over there. But who do we think is going to win that division?
I think the reigning team to go to the big game, the Cincinnati Bengals, I think, and you could bookmark it now, number one offense in the NFL. You heard it here first.
What happens if that line folds though and Burrow gets hurt early on?
It folded last year.
That they did.
Good point.
And they probably had like bottom 5 line in the league and top 10 offense for sure. Maybe not quite top 5, but they have weapons, and I love the addition of Hayden Hurst, who I feel like hasn't gotten a fair shake wherever he's gone. Like, got traded from Baltimore when Mark Andrews emerged. Then he goes to Atlanta. It's like, oh, this could be awesome. They drafted Kyle Pitts. And it's like, okay, now he's going to the team that passed or didn't get the opportunity to draft Kyle Pitts that he was originally favored to go to because they got Ja'Marr Chase, which, pretty bad pick they made there. Doesn't really know how to catch a football, but just playing. He's unreal. So Hayden Hurst goes there. I don't like what the Ravens have built. They still don't have wide receivers for Lamar. You still just got Rashad Bateman. You traded Marquise Brown. So Pittsburgh, Trubisky ain't the man, and Cleveland, they don't deserve to be talked about. I'll be honest, but they don't deserve to be talked about.
I want to pick the Ravens, and I want to go against Dane with that, but I can't help but think that the Bengals will find a way to at least win that division. I don't know about go all the way back, but Joe Burrow is a great talent, and he kind of broke free last year, even before everyone started getting the eyes on him towards the end of the regular season, and so I'm going to go with the Bengals as well.
I feel like I'm going to have to use like the adult diaper term of if here for the Ravens, because if the Ravens can stay healthy, then I think that they win this division with a clean sweep. I mean, they have, when you take a look at their depth chart, they undoubtedly have the best defense in the entire NFL, just from top to bottom. There is not a single position on that defense that I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't like beg to have on the Bears. But the Bengals, on the other hand, as well, I think that I could easily see them usurping the Ravens.
And didn't they just draft the number
Kyle
one?
Hamilton.
Yeah, Kyle Hamilton. Yeah. He's going to be a stud. I'm going against you, Dane. I'm saying that the Baltimore Ravens are going to have a very good year this year. Lamar Jackson's fighting for a mega contract. He's seeing all these other quarterbacks. I know Russell Wilson, just signed a multi-million dollar contract this morning, actually. And that is going to do something to Lamar Jackson. He's won an MVP in the last 5 years. He's going to want that money, and he's going to go out there and get it. And he's going to lead the AFC North. He's going to lead the Baltimore Ravens to the AFC North title.
I hate the but before Mikey talks, I have to say I hate the Lamar Jackson slander. I think half the league would kill to have him as their starting quarterback. The dude slings the ball. He throws a very pretty ball, and he just also happens to be the best runner since Mike Vick. So I hate the slander. He's not the problem. It's all the other pieces on offense.
I'd agree with that. And I was going to say, going off what David said, I think it's time to head west because we still got two of these divisions to go and only a couple minutes left in the show. Let's go to the west where we have the Raiders, the Chiefs, the Chargers, and, of course, my favorite, not my favorite team, but my favorite team to talk about, Broncos country, let's ride.
Let's ride. Redbird country. Let's ride.
So going into this division, I know Dane kind of closed out the show last week talking about this division. So we only have a couple minutes, but tell me who you think the winner of this division is going to be.
We can go with someone else because I already slammed home the Broncos country is going to win the division. So
I'll start with this one. It's tough. You know, Kansas City has kind of ruled this division for the past few years, but I do think that Kansas City took a big hit when they lost Tyreek Hill. I don't know what that's going to do to Patrick Mahomes. It's really going to test, you know, where his talent level was at, because he's had elite pieces around him since he's gotten to the league. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, he had earlier in his career, he had Kareem Hunt. I don't know what this is going to do to him. Hopefully, you know, he kind of keeps on pace of where he's been in his career so far. But if I'm going to say a winner of the AFC West, I like Los Angeles Chargers. I like Justin Herbert. I like that, you know, the defensive side, you got Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa. What quarterback is going to be able to throw on them? Like,
J.C. Jackson, too.
And then if he does, you got J.C. Jackson and Derwin James ready to pick it off or force a fumble. It's going to be very good for the Los Angeles Chargers this year.
That's such a good division.
Yeah, I think they have a very good chance of winning it.
So you're going to go with the Chargers, you said? Sorry.
I'm going with the Chargers, okay. Yep.
It's the most talented division of all time. I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah. It's one of them for sure.
You have four QBs that all on pace to be Hall of Famers if their career stays consistent for the rest of their career.
I'll make it short. As a Bears fan, I got to see over the last 2 years, especially how good Devontae Adams can be with a good quarterback. Oh, yeah. I think Derek Carr is right there from a good quarterback.
Wait a second.
That's a hot take right
there. I think Vegas can find a way in this division.
Oh my gosh, he did it!
I think they can find a way. I think the Raiders have really dealt some bad cards recently.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm playing devil's advocate. Obviously, I hate to count out the Chiefs, especially. I think Wilson's taken a step back, so I'm counting out the Broncos. And I think the Chargers have improved enough to make me pick them.
Derek Carr is so underrated. People do not respect how good Derek Carr is. I'm gonna leave it right there because I know we're running out of time. But
Blake,
underrated.
Real quick, the Derek Carr slander should not be tolerated. He should have won that MVP back in, I think it was 2017, before he got hurt. He was on pace to have one of the best years of his career. I'm going to take the Chiefs. I think that they did enough to replace Tyreek Hill with the receiver position, and they got better on defense with Trent McDuffie and the former Wisconsin Badger, Leo Chenal. I think that they're going to still be great.
All four teams picked, four different picks. All right, heading to the South. This is the last division we have. We got the Texans, Titans, Colts, and Jags. I'll start this one. I think the Colts are so good they can go all the way through the AFC. I think they're going to be great. I think the team that should be looked at as this year's Rams, the team that had a new veteran quarterback already put on a good team, is not the Broncos. It should be the Colts.
Ooh. You know what, Mikey? With that pick of the Raiders, like, I'm going to my brain and my heart are fighting again. Give me the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Wow. Now suddenly no one will be talking about my Raiders pick because they'll remember Dane's Jaguars pick instead.
Dude, so I don't know if there's any – like the bar is so low with Urban Meyer as a head NFL coach that you upgrade to Doug Peterson. It might be the biggest addition to any team this offseason. You get a second year of Trevor Lawrence with a year under his belt. You add Travis Etienne, who's going to be absolutely force-fed the ball. You added some weapons on offense. You know what? You added some weapons on defense, too, with the first pick, Trayvon Walker. And Jacksonville, recency bias, they beat Jonathan Taylor week, what was that, 17 last year?
Yeah,
so you know what? Honestly, this is just me being contrarian. I'm just going Jacksonville. Give it to me.
I love it.
I would hope they do something. They gave an average Christian Kirk one of the highest wide receiver contracts in the league. I'm not going with them, though. I'm probably going to have – this is probably the easiest one for me. The Colts, I mean, you know, I think they have that lead by a mile in the AFC South.
Just to give it some sort of variety, this division makes me want to throw up in my mouth, to be completely honest with you guys. But I'm going to take the Titans. They got the Kings still. They got a defense that's improving. And Mike Vrabel and that team have just found a way every single year to win. I mean, they were 9-7 in the AFC Championship game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And they were throwing some haymakers at them, and they could have come out of there if they hadn't collapsed. But, yeah, I'm going to go with the Titans for this one.
The loss of Harold Landry does stink. But before we leave, too, I do have to do one piece of Derek Carr slander. That hard knock season with the Raiders, too much baby oil, dude.
Too much baby oil.
I'll close up the show because I got to tell you guys about a bet I made with my roommates last night going back to the NFC. Sports Illustrated posted they think the Lions will have more wins than the Vikings. They said the Lions, goodness. I think 9-8, and I don't remember what they said for the Vikings, maybe 6 wins. And I just thought that was so disgusting. I said, and this could be recorded to be played back later, if the Lions somehow win more games than the Vikings, I will shave my head.
Lit. And you know what? Hard knocks bias is the worst.
It's such a bias. And that's why they posted it, because they want people to like it up, because everyone loves the Lions right now, and it's a problem.
The Lions would be the best hockey team in the NHL because Dan Campbell would be the best.
Oh, you hyped them all up. I think that's going to be all for this edition of The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. For Dane and David and Blake, I'm Mikey Fernelli. Have a good night.
WZND LP Blooming.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone, again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.